Welcome to Sister Share, where six sisters living around the world come together each week to talk about motherhood, health, cooking, parenting, and so much more. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Sister Share. We're so happy you joined us. Tonight on the call, we have all six sisters from around the world joining in for the conversation. Who's here?
Hi, I'm Lorraine from Idaho.
This is Nettie in Okinawa, Japan.
This is Mamie in Logan, Utah.
This is Heidi in Orem.
And Katie in Salem.
Tonight, our topic is homeschool hints, and we have a special expert guest with us. Mamie's going to introduce her.
Just want to comment that we said six sisters are here to join us, but Rebecca actually isn't here today, so we see six faces because we have our special guest here, and that is Mariah. Mariah's, maybe you could tell us where you're coming in from, but Mariah's our sister-in-law, and she's our special guest because she homeschools full-time. We also have all of us at one time or another have homeschooled a child at a time or a couple of children at a time or a year at a time. And currently right now, Heidi is also homeschooling her children, has done that for a couple of years. But Mariah, you have done this consistently throughout your whole motherhood, and we would love to hear how you came into that, what your motivation is, anything you would like to share with us.
Yes, I'm from Oklahoma currently. We've lived all over, but that's where I am today. So I homeschooled myself as a junior and senior in high school. And then I knew at that time that I wanted to homeschool my own children. And so I started when my oldest was about 18 months, just doing a little preschool stuff during the day. And then it grew from there. And we've been homeschooling ever since. So at this time, he's in seventh grade. So I wanted to homeschool because I felt like it was a good opportunity to customize my children's education and to fit their needs specifically. And I think there were also elements of my education that I wanted to incorporate that I just wanted to make sure that they had, and to include things that were valuable to me that weren't always included in public schools. So,
Mariah, I love how you said customize to your children. That is something that you can do in homeschool. How do you make sure that you're customizing to your children's needs?
So I think part of it is knowing specifically about each child, their capabilities. You know, as a parent, you're with them a lot, and so you see what they're capable of. And so maybe one child, you know, is capable of better handwriting, for example. And so then you can say, you know, we're going to redo that assignment because I know you're capable of better. So just also challenging them if they're excelling in a certain subject, there's the opportunity to challenge them more to sort of level up if they need it, or if maybe they're struggling with an assignment, to give them extra time and to redo a math lesson, to spend 2 weeks on something that originally you'd plan just one. So I alter as I go along. And then when I'm planning for the school year, I will look back at what I've done with other children for that same grade and subject, and then think about the child and what would fit them best.
That's awesome. I don't want to do too much talking, but that does bring up a question for me. I loved homeschooling. I did it for a year. It was the year after COVID when there were still a lot of protocols at school, like masks. And I have a degree in elementary education and thought this is the perfect opportunity for me to try homeschooling and to see how I like it. And so we did it for that year. And I had children grades 8 and 8th grade and down. And I absolutely loved it. One of the things I could never figure out, though, is how to teach my children to follow deadlines. So like you said, sometimes you'll plan a week for something and end up taking two. I think that's great, but how do you make sure that you are the one deciding how long it's going to take and not the child? Like if my children, it just seemed like it was a sock deadline. Yeah, I'm supposed to have this assignment done by 3, but this is just for my mom. So how do you instill in them the realization that this is a deadline? You need to be doing your best instead of letting your children slack off. That was something I just couldn't figure out.
Absolutely. I think that's really challenging. And I've discussed it with other moms in general and homeschool moms that it's hard to know when to push your child and when to sort of give them a break or extend a deadline. So it is a struggle, and I don't think I have it perfectly figured out. I think as I've gone through, I've started to become more aware of my child's needs. And so if that child does, you know, I can kind of gauge better whether this is them at their best saying, "Mom, I'm really having a hard time," or whether it's not the best in them and they're just wanting a break, you know. And I mean, I've said this to my kids. I have one in particular who struggles very much in math. And so, you know, if there are tears, I'm like, no, we're not going to keep going. Your brain is not able to learn well when you're so upset emotionally. And so that takes precedence. So I think that there's times where I'm like, hard rule, we're not going to do school through tears. But I've also become more comfortable customizing education. I think at the beginning I felt very determined to follow curriculums exactly, and whereas now I trust myself more to decide what's needful and what's not. Maybe that enrichment activity might be fun. However, you know, they're going to be burnt out, and so we are going to exclude it or whatever it is. It's still a challenge, but I usually try to give them enough work and know how long it will take and have limits of, you know, we're going to pause for dinner. And if you're, you know, usually we're well done by then. But if for some reason we're not, we'll pause for dinner. You need a break. I need a break. And we can work more tonight. And if not tomorrow, we just do 4 days of school a week. And so there's always that buffer day that sometimes kids do need, that on the fifth day that they can finish up a subject. So I guess that's something that's been helpful to have the extra time.
That's beautiful. Thanks so much, Mariah. Can you take time to just go through what your day looks like? What ages of your children, what grades, and what you said you had the 4 days a week. So just give us a little glimpse of your system and your schedule.
Sure. So we do morning jobs and things like that are not really homeschool per se, but just life things. And then obviously breakfast. And then at 9 o'clock, I have everybody come into the living room. We do a prayer, and they have just 5 minutes, which I know is extremely short, but that's what we do, of silent, independent scripture reading. And, you know, some of them are quite young, so some of them are looking at church magazines for kids and not reading in the actual scriptures, but it varies. And then after 5 minutes, we all take a turn reading one verse from the scriptures, and then we move into our homeschool area and do pledge. And then the oldest 3 are dismissed to start their work independently. And then with the youngers, I do a song and go through the calendar, and then they start their work. So I have 5 children. The oldest right now is in 7th grade and is 12. So he can do the majority of his work independently, which is wonderful. I do check every assignment to make sure it's done, you know, correctly and to the standard I expect for him. But most of his work can be done by himself. So he's good to go. And then the second is 11, and he is in 6th grade. And so he does a lot of work alone, but requires a little more help. And so I do, I'll check in with him as well during the day, and he can do most things by himself. And so at the beginning, I have him try to focus on those more independent tasks. And then my third is in fifth grade, and she is 9. And again, she can do a good amount by herself, not everything, but she starts her independent work first. I've always tried to start my one-on-one time with the youngest and sort of move up in the grades. Anyway, so then my fourth is in second grade, and he is 7. And then my last is in pre-K, and she's 4. So after the pledge and the calendar, everyone kind of goes to their own workstation. And then I'm with the youngest, and we do 2 days of the week. We do a little craft together, and then whatever I have put in her backpack. And so for pre-K years, I choose 4 main areas to focus on, whether that's like fine motor skills or numbers and counting or letter recognition. And each of the 4 days I focus on one, and it's just about 10 or 15 minutes with her. And then when I'm done with her, she goes to do a sensory bin or some independent bin activities that I've set out for her that are things that she can do completely alone, but occupy her for a little bit while I help the others. So then I go and help the 7-year-old with his work. And so I just kind of move up with each child. And then at 12, wherever we're at, we just pause. And depending on the weather, they all go outside for outside time. I think that's really important to have some fresh air and just creative time in nature. So they go outside while I sort of tidy up a bit and make lunch. And then they come back in, we eat together, and then they have an hour of reading and resting time. And they are free to choose whatever they'd like to read at this time. It's not school reading, but I do like to have them have some reading time that is theirs, you know, because I do require reading during school that I get to pick. And so I want them to have their own interests for books. And then after that's done, we resume. And so at this point, the preschooler is definitely done. The second grader might be done. And so it's really the 3 oldest. And so I look at what's left and sort of make a plan from there, because I cannot help everyone at once usually. And so I decide like, this is an independent activity you can still do. Please go work on that. I'm going to help so-and-so with their whatever. So, and then usually we're done about 4 o'clock, and then I have time to do what I need to for the rest of the day.
That's a great day. Wow.
Very impressive. That's beautiful, Mariah. Thank you.
Can I ask you a question? Maybe you covered this. I'm in and out with kids, but you have kids right now from age four to 7th grade. What did you do when they were, and like you said, your 7th grader didn't need a lot of help. Your 6th grader needed a little more, but then you have more of your time to spend with the youngers. What did you do when they were all young and they needed a lot more hands-on?
So when everybody needed my help, it's definitely more challenging. And I remember a time when I had 4 kids and they were all much younger. And I ran into another homeschool mom at the library, and her kids were all older. And she said, it gets easier, just so you know. And it was so sweet to have her encourage me. You know, she said, I remember that stage when everyone needs you and it gets better. And I mean, I've always been grateful for the opportunity to homeschool, and it's what I've wanted to do. When they are younger, I've still followed that plan where I start with the youngest and move up. I include subjects that are independent starting at first grade level. And so the first grader can do music, which for us is just listening to classical music while they do sort of a hands-on thing like Play-Doh or play with magnetiles or something. And so that's independent automatically. I mean, sometimes they might need help setting up the CD player, but after that, they're good to go. And so they all have had in pre-K and kindergarten, they still do those bin activities and sensory bin, and it's scheduled. And those are things that are independent. Of course, the preschooler does finish her activities, and I'm not done with the olders. And so at that point, she can go play by herself. And I guess I've always tried to cultivate independent playtime. I think that's also valuable. So, you know, she can go listen to audio CDs or play with her toys. And the other kids, we do have, I call them stretch breaks. And so after working about an hour and a half, they set a timer for themselves and, you know, they'll check in with me. Hey, mom, I'd like to take a stretch break right now. I'm like, great. That sounds good. Please set a timer with your name on it. So that way I know whose is whose. And then they will often go play with the youngers during that time. And so they are kind of kept busy. And I guess it's just the embedded routine, perhaps, that they've gotten used to what that has to look like. I mean, I've just always kind of tried to focus on the youngest one. And then once they feel like they've had some attention from me, they're usually more content to go off and do independent things.
Mariah, I'm just impressed. It's so inspiring to listen to all the things. I love the 4-day week. I can see how that gives incentive to finish work in 4 days and not five. I love the stretch breaks, the cultivating independence. I think those are really key principles of being successful homeschooling. You said that you end generally at four. I guess my question is, I know that you also do a lot of prep work. You're talking about sensory bins and having their backpacks full. When do you find time to do that part? And how do you keep your house running at the same time? Like, when are you vacuuming? When are you cleaning the bathrooms? When are you making a menu for dinner and doing all the other stuff that needs to happen along with homeschool? And I know that you do it because you have this gorgeous home and it's well kept. How does that all function?
We are all wondering these things, Mariah, for sure.
You're all making me laugh. I mean, it's not perfect by any means. And my friends joke about how much I love to plan. And it's true. It just is so satisfying to me. And even after, you know, years, you know, a decade of homeschooling, I still, when I start a new school year, because we do take summer breaks, it feels a little bit like jet lag, you know, or whiplash or something when I first start a new school year. And because it's so much time that I'm sitting with the kids. And I mean, I will pause, you know, if there's a minute where nobody needs me, I might go flip over the laundry or something, you know, or quick put out plates for lunch or something like that to kind of be thinking ahead. But because it is an adjustment and it is a huge time commitment, I do, you know, make sure I put in freezer meals before school starts. And, you know, I have like a month of freezer meals and dinners and breakfasts. And then lunch is always just really simple things. And I do try to deep clean the house before school starts. I mean, of course, that doesn't last the whole school year, but I know it's going to take some time for me to acclimate to, the new schedule and just remind myself, oh wow, this is what it feels like and looks like when so much of my day is busy. The kids do have morning jobs that help with tidiness. You know, they're simple things that can usually be done in under 5 minutes. They're really quick. But they just sort of keep things in order. And at the end of each day, I will make sure everyone has tidied up, that the house is in order, that dishes are done, laundry's folded and put away. I guess not everyone functions that way. I mean, I've talked to other homeschool moms and they're just like, yeah, I save the chores for Saturday, you know, and the house gets blown up in between. And I mean, sometimes that's the case. You know, we have some activities that they are building something and so it's huge and it drives me crazy because it's in the middle of stuff and I really like having things in order. So there's a balance, you know, but I do, I mean, I might try to fit in usually after breakfast, between breakfast and homeschool, there is a maybe 30 to 15 minute window where I can do something, maybe start the crockpot dinner, maybe vacuum a room or, you know, just something simple. So I can fit in something there. And then, oftentimes I will fold laundry while homeschooling. All of the kids you know what to do. And other than the preschooler who might be doing a craft that I need to have hands on with her, and, you know, if it's paint or whatever, obviously I can't fold laundry at the same time. But the other kids, most of the work that I do is verbal. And so while I'm talking about parts of speech, I can be folding a load of laundry. You know, the kids do work as well, and so that helps. And then at the end of the week, it does feel a little bit like I'm coming up for air, and I can refocus on the house. And sort of then I look around and think, oh, like, there's these things that I need to take care of. And so then I will, you know, address that. So I do probably put most of my cleaning on non-school days, but I will do little bits here and there during the week. And for me, everything that is planned and pre-thought out means less deciding in the moment. I have a harder time making thoughtful decisions when there's five people talking to me, or even a couple people talking to me. And so I plan ahead of time. I'll plan the month's meals ahead of time. Halfway through a month, I will make a plan for the next month's meals, and then and a shopping list for the non-perishables, and, you know, things like that. So that way I'm not making decisions in the moment. That is really helpful to me. And I do get up early to have some quiet alone time so that I can have some sanity and just to look over the day, remind myself what needs to happen and what my goals are. So that way I can fit things in and prioritize and say, okay, I need, you know, other than the normal of school and meals, I need to also keep in mind these two tasks that have to get done today. So hopefully that wasn't too many details, but that's generally how I go about it, and hope for the best.
I have another question. One of the reasons we sent our kids back to school, first of all, we have a really great school next to us, which we really, really love. But second of all, I wanted them to be introduced to some of what the world is like without me having to be the introducer, but me being the influencer on what they think of it. So then they would come home with things that I would never, ever introduce to them. But then I could talk to them about it and have an influence on how they interpreted what was going on around them. How do you do that in homeschool?
Absolutely. I think that there, one of my brothers-in-law was talking to me about this actually, and said, you are just so consistent. Your kids are going to hit the world and think, oh my goodness, this isn't how it's supposed to go. And I think that that's true, that, you know, I do really value consistency and patterns and habits and expectations that are regular and things like that. I think that maybe there's a few different ways that I can think about this. One is that they have started where they're proactive in seeking out things and learning things themselves. And so, you know, they're doing things and then I don't even know about. And so they'll say, hey mom, I was researching this and, or whatever it is. And I'm like, oh wow. You know, or I didn't even know you were looking into that. And so I appreciate hearing what they're doing and, that they've developed, an attitude of, curiosity, that they're, hoping to learn new things. And, so they, you know, we go to the library regularly so that they can follow their interests that way. And, you know, they do research on YouTube and stuff like that. We also are involved in our community quite a bit. They have some neighbors they play with a lot. And, of course, our church community. And we recently joined a co-op, which is a homeschool group that we meet once a week. It's quite a large group. It's the largest co-op I've come in contact with. And it's been really interesting to see them have teachers other than me. And the first day, my second child came home and he was evaluating his teacher. And he wasn't being unkind. It was just interesting to hear him evaluate her teaching ability. And then the second time, like, oh, mom, she was much better today. She was more confident today. And I was like, oh, good. I'm glad. And so they've come up, you know, against other children that are definitely not viewing the world the same way we do. They've been involved in gymnastics, and then my two oldest are in the Boy Scout troop in town. And so they do come across these situations that, you know, it's challenging for them that other people maybe don't have the same family culture we do. And I've appreciated those opportunities and to allow them to see that different people are different, and doesn't mean it's wrong or bad or good. It just, it's different ways of viewing the world and approaching the world. And then they can have a conversation about that. And, you know, and I reiterate to them that when they're in charge, the adult, they can pick what they want for their family, and that we have picked what we want for our family. And yeah, so, I mean, I guess it's not perfect. I don't think that any, you know, childhood can be perfectly tailored to, you know, it, there's no ultimate, I guess is what I'm saying. You know, we all do the best we can and try as much as we can. And I think that that's enough.
I love that. And I like all the stuff you're doing. Could Heidi also chime in here? Because I think that she also has a lot to add to how to help your students or your kids get out into the world and experience it on a level that you're willing to have them experience it on. Do you have thoughts, Hides?
Well, I think just what Mariah said, we try to have our kids involved in a lot of things, which makes our schedule crazy, but I do like that they get to get out and have different groups of people that they get to interact with and learn from. So, I mean, I really don't have more to say than that. We just try and keep them involved and have interactions with other kids since they're not getting that at school. So they can come in contact with things that we can influence, like Katie said, and answer questions.
Yeah. And I think those of us with kids in school have the same conversations probably in our homes that try to mitigate or explain what they're seeing in the world versus how we live at home. I think those are important conversations to have no matter what you're doing to train your kids. Sometimes I felt like I was sending my kids to school for 8 hours and then I had 4 hours as a parent to unlearn them all the stuff that they had learned during the day, because we have to have these conversations to help them come right with and see correctly the things they're seeing and explain the world around them. So thank you.
I have a question for both Mariah and Heidi. I know there's hundreds, thousands of wonderful resources out there. If you could just briefly name like your top four or five, just even if you list them or say something briefly about them, I would love to hear, just because I'm always looking for resources. I don't homeschool my children right now. I have off and on in various situations, but I love, always have things on hand to teach them. And I often homeschool in the summer, I guess is what I do. So could you just list a few of your favorite resources that you've used?
Sure. One that you might have already heard of is called Teachers Pay Teachers, and that's an online resource. I don't use it every day by any means, but if I need, what I was doing yesterday with it was looking up human body systems and cutouts, because I wanted to make an overlay thing of all the systems. And a lot of the resources on there are free, which I appreciate. And then there are some that are at a low cost. So I really like that resource. I also, the library, I just, everywhere we've lived, we've gotten a library card and it's been huge. I think the kids love books and are always so excited. I feel like it always feels magical to me almost when we get a new load of library books and we come home and we always have silent reading time every day, but right after library, when the books are fresh, it's just magical. They all sit and they're just absorbed in the new books. So I think the library, you know, different libraries have different opportunities. And when my kids were younger, we participated in programs at the library more. Now not as much, but, those were wonderful social opportunities when the kids were little. This is more of a homeschool specific thing. I love the Well-Trained Mind book. It's sort of a homeschool backbone for me. It goes over several curriculum choices and then maybe some strengths and weaknesses of them, some places where you can buy them, and some suggestions for schedules and requirements for each grade. That book has been really helpful. I think that even if you weren't homeschooling and maybe you were teaching chemistry, you could go in and see what resources they suggest for chemistry and use those. They've been very helpful to me, those items in that book. And then I just think the christianbook.com is where I order all of my curriculum from. So it is a Christian-based website, so I think their primary thing is Bibles and other religious texts. However, they have a great homeschooling section, and that's where I order all of my curriculum from. They are like a supplier, so it's not them creating all of it, but they have a variety of different resources. So I think those are my top ones.
Very helpful. Thank you. What about you, Heidi?
I would second the library. We hardly ever go there when my kids are in public school. And when we homeschool, it's a lifeline. And just like Mariah said, we just go there and get books. And I'm just always amazed at the resources they have that I'm just really not aware of when it's not necessary. And so many more options than a school library. When my kids are in public school, the options that they have at their library are so limited compared to what's at a city library. So I love our library. I would say nature is one of our biggest resources. We just love to be outside and hiking and exploring. And the kids discover so much and learn so much in nature. I've discovered something called the well-educated heart. I appreciate it. It's kind of a mindset of teaching your kids the arts, that the arts are so educational and missing kind of in today's curriculum. And I'm more of a logical person, so I make sure that the language arts and the math is done. So it's harder for me to want to spend time on the arts and classical music and just the fine arts. And so it's been helpful for me to see art, and it provides beautiful art to look at with your children and analyze the art. And so it's just been helpful to have that mindset, to try and learn that mindset of bringing in the arts to my kids' curriculum, because it's not natural for me. Also, we use a lot of the Good and the Beautiful curriculum, and I do appreciate their book list because I'm not up on all the authors and good books. So I do appreciate their book list that I access quite a bit when we do go to the library, so that we're focused when we go to the library and are looking for certain things. So I really like that. It has age appropriate material and it ranks them and rates them on, you know, entertainment, educational, moral quality of the book. So I appreciate that. I think those are some of our top ones. Can I ask a question though? Well, since all of you have homeschooled, one of the things I struggle with the most, I don't like all the competitiveness in school, but as I homeschool, I'm realizing there's a place for it. It's hard for me. I find it's hard for my kids to learn at an accelerated rate when there's not competition, when they're the only ones learning multiplication tables because they're all in a different grade. And I find that when I was in school, I learned things much quicker, or sometimes my kids struggle with their handwriting because there's no one to compare it to. And so I feel like we work very slowly through certain topics because there's no competition for them to accelerate their learning and want to be on top and want to be at the best in their class. So I'm curious if any of you have any comments about that, how I can kind of get healthy competition going somehow, motivate excellence when they're all in different grades. Anyways, any thoughts on that?
Mariah, you've got to address that one. I think you have the most experience.
That's really interesting. Heidi, I have not thought about that too much. Honestly, I mean, I don't know if it's just my children. I try to avoid the competition. I mean, I think that they do feel it at times with each other. But because they're in different grades, I hope that they don't compare themselves too much because they do have different strengths and weaknesses. I do sometimes will comment to them about how they progressed, or like, you know, if you look back at this handwriting assignment, you were able to do it this well, and I would like to see that level of work today, you know? And so I will have them, I mean, compare with themselves, maybe, you know, oh, you, by the way, you got every question right on your math test this week. I don't always tell them their scores, to be honest. It's for me, it's more information to just sort of see how they, how they're doing, and like, oh, apparently they need more practice with, you know, the 7x tables or whatever it is. I think for my kids, the biggest motivator is about time. They want time to themselves and time to do their own projects, follow their own hobbies. And maybe that's, I mean, a fault that I'm passing on, because I also really value my time. And so, but for them, they know if they work diligently, they have more time to do what they'd like to, that they're really hoping to go work on, you know, their project, or go play or whatever it is. So I think that for my kids, you know, they know if they get it done, they get more time. But yeah, I mean, I think that you could definitely think about like putting up a, you know, you could put up a poster or something and like, let's keep track of, you know, how you've been doing. And if you can do it this many times, you can, you know, have some sort of positive consequence if you wanted. But I don't feel like I'm being super helpful with that question, but that's how I've handled it, for the most part. And some of my children are very motivated and some are less. The ones that are less motivated, sometimes I will set timers for them. Some subjects are timed, like you need to read for 30 minutes this book or whatever it is. But some children who drag their feet through things, I'll say, how long do you think this will take? And then we'll set a timer, or I'll say, I'd like you to be, you know, working for this amount of time, and let's see how many you can get done. And so I guess I use time a lot as a motivating factor. So I hope that's helpful a little bit.
Thank you. I have to chime in with Mariah. I think pitting them kind of against themselves is a good idea. I also think it depends on your personality and your goals and values. So I sense that Mariah is more child-oriented and she wants to help her children along. Me, I would be goal-oriented. Like I would want them to have a certain percentage on a test that they were aiming for, I teach school and I have 26 kids and they're all at a different level. And we talk about that a lot. We actually try to celebrate the differences, because I have low kids who will not engage because they're not on the same level as the high kids. And I have high kids who won't excel because everybody's lower than they are. So I think even in public school, we have this problem of how do we help motivate them to their best ability? And we talk about, well, we have percentages at school. I mean, you have to show mastery on certain subjects. We also have PRs. So I liked Mariah's idea of comparing to a past assignment, their handwriting. Like when we're writing, they have a personal record. Yesterday you wrote 9 lines. So you can never go below that, because that's your PR. Now you're going to try to, let's set a new goal. Let's set another goal and make it happen. So I think goal setting is really big for us. And also at school, we do a lot of visual record keeping. So when they bring in their homework, it goes on our chart on the wall. When they are mastering their math and they've done a mastery check for me, that goes on a chart on the wall so that they can see how other people are doing. And they're not all doing the same assignment, but they're all moving up depending on their ability. So I think you can even make it a family chart if you want, and not always a personal kid, but moving up. But hi, it's that. And Mariah, that leads me to another question, which is, how do you know they're learning what they should be for their grade level? Like, how do you test? Where are your metrics for the year? How do you know that you're going fast enough or whatever? How do you test?
I use a curriculum that has it all laid out for me. So it's just an open and go, and it tells me what they should be learning. And we have assessments, and it says they have to get a certain percentage of the assessments right to move on. So that's what I use. I don't know people that make their own lesson plans, because I'm not that smart.
I do the same thing. I follow curriculum. I know, I've used a lot of the same curriculum several years in a row. And so I know, this math curriculum has 30 lessons and we do 36 weeks of school. So there's a buffer. And so if a lesson is challenging, if a child is struggling, I can spread it out over 2 weeks. And if, they've used up all their spare weeks, then we go into the summer. And I just, I aim for one lesson per subject per week. And our language curriculum is 36 weeks, so it matches up with what we do. And then history is more. It's like 42 weeks. And so we do our 36 weeks, and then we do an abbreviated version in the summer. I did do a reading level assessment on my oldest when he was in kindergarten, and that I got from a public school teacher friend because I was curious. I think especially at the beginning, I was uncertain of how my work was lining up with expectations. The book I mentioned, The Well-Trained Mind, lays out expectations for each grade level. And so I've used that sort of as an example. And there are times where my children do not line up. Maybe they're a little bit ahead or a little bit behind. But I still try to finish a curriculum each school year. I think too, if a test score is poor, or even if it's not, even if it's just sort of a B, for example, I will look and say, oh, was this a silly mistake that I know that they know how to do this skill? Or are they getting all of this type of problem wrong? And that means that skill is not understood. And so sometimes I'll try to figure it out. I really appreciate that in the language and math curriculums we use, that there's a lot of review. And so I know that if maybe they weren't extremely solid on a topic, that it will be reviewed. However, if it's, they're really struggling, I'll definitely repeat things. So I think at the beginning, I was more uncertain of if my kids were on target or not. And now I feel more comfortable. And so I don't worry about it as much, as long as they're learning what's in the curriculums. So like Heidi, I trust the judgment of the curriculum creators a lot.
Quick question, a little bit about grade level, but more just about upper grades. I know you're not to this level, Mariah, but you homeschooled yourself. We have a 10th grader who was interested in homeschooling this year, and we found, because I've only really homeschooled up to 6th grade, we found it's just more difficult because you have to find outlets that the state recognizes if you want them to have a diploma. And you homeschooled yourself and then went on to college. So maybe you could address that, how you can make sure if you're homeschooling a high schooler that you're doing it in accordance with the state standards so that they can have education beyond high school without you stinting their growth because you did it the way you wanted and the state didn't recognize it.
Absolutely. I think that's definitely a concern that's on minds of homeschoolers, that you want that your child to be successful throughout life. And from my own experience, I went through an accredited online high school. And so they conformed to their state's standards. And as a result, they could give high school diplomas. which were recognized. And I did complete that and get a high school diploma. It is an option for a lot of colleges to apply as a homeschooler. And so they recognize that you might not have the typical transcript. For my own kids, I think that you can start preparing early, maybe a little earlier, for standardized tests like the ACT and SAT, and get prep books and just expose them to that, prepare them. I have not fully delved into, I'm aware of a few resources that people have mentioned about preparing transcripts and making sure you're accredited, but I honestly haven't done a lot of work in that area yet. So I could probably send those to you later. I don't know if you all do links in the show notes or something like that, but I could send those to you later. I don't have them off the top of my head. But I know, for example, Utah's standards and requirements for graduation are pretty specific. And so I remember kind of doing some random things, and because I was just homeschooling my junior and senior year and I was transferring from out of state, there were requirements that I hadn't met that were sort of built in, but Utah had a lot of specific ones. There were just not typical for where I was. So, I mean, I think it varies by state too. And there might be some homeschool umbrella groups that you can have them complete a transcript for you. But maybe some of you other sisters might know some other resources.
I do know that at least here in Idaho, the state education office offers online classes and courses. And I think that online is now a very common thing, that you could put your high schooler into online courses and end up with a transcript and a diploma, whether it's from your current high school or another district or another high school that's online in the state. So I think it's fairly easy to do now with all the online stuff. My question is, though, would that align? Like, that would be an adjustment for your child to be doing homeschool, but all online and almost a different ethical standard in some cases, so that they can have a diploma at the end. It would be a change of type of learning for them. How would you navigate that? Or would you? What would you choose to do?
That's a good question. I think, I guess I would need to research the courses to see if I felt like they were a choice I wanted to make for my children. There are a lot of great options out there. When I homeschooled myself, it was mainly through that one online program, but there were a couple others that I included as well to sort of round out the education. So when I was a senior, because I knew that there were these other requirements that I had not planned on completing, I mean, because students in Utah had the 4 years of high school to incorporate all of these little extra things that my public high school had not. So when it was my senior year, I honestly hadn't planned on getting a high school diploma myself. There were just all these extra little things, and I thought, I don't have time. You know, that'd be too many courses to try to jam in my senior year. And so I wasn't planning on it, but the school guidance counselor for my online school called me in and said, "And you know, it looks like you're actually really close. And I think that if you just do these couple things, you know, it can work," because I had done a lifeguard first aid CPR training class, and some, you know, just things that they're like, oh, this could fit here and this could fit here. So I had the understanding that I might not get a high school diploma, with the complete assurance that I was going to go to college and get a bachelor's degree. It was very important in my family culture growing up to have an education, including, you know, from college, and not just an associate's, but a bachelor's. So I only was willing to not have a high school diploma because I knew I was going to go on for further education, because I felt like if I finished high school, did not have a high school diploma, and did not get a college degree, I'd be pretty stuck if I ever wanted to do any other education or have a career, that would be a huge hindrance. So I guess if I, you know, if it came down to it and I didn't feel like the options for a diploma were good for my children, I would be okay with that, I guess. I think because a lot of colleges accept homeschoolers with that understanding now. And as long as my children continue to want to get a degree, I think if there was a child that didn't want to go to college, I would definitely want them to make the effort to get a high school diploma. So, I mean, it's hard to know what you do until you're in that situation, but I think that's how I view it right now.
Thank you. Can I just recap what I've learned?
Yes.
Mostly that homeschooling takes a lot of structure and personal effort. I think that sometimes we homeschooling is not like that doesn't come out, is that it's effort and time for the mother and planning and structure. And so I appreciate that you do that, Mariah. I think that's what I've gained, is that you are putting a lot of time. This is your career to teach your children. It's not something you're doing on the side because you want them home. It's something that you are making an effort to plan, to structure your life around, and to prioritize. Can I ask one other? I feel like it's an obvious question. What about the days you're sick or the days you just don't want to get up? Do you have those?
That's what I'm wondering.
What about potty training? Sorry, that also under that.
Oh, I never, ever have those. Not even once.
I believe that completely, 100%. What about those of us who would?
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, there are days where I definitely don't feel it. And I am pretty disciplined in just kind of doing it. Maybe I'd say, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 times a year, I will make a judgment call, you know, the night before or at the morning, you know, this is not a good day for this. And so because we do the 4 days, it'll push the day. So maybe we do school that week, Tuesday through Friday. You know, or maybe it's because a friend said, hey, my public school kids are off today and we want to go to the science museum. Would you like to come? And I'm, of course, that sounds wonderful. Let's do it. So I am getting better at being flexible, but honestly, I'm not. I mean, for my kids, if they're sick, the choices are to go rest in bed and they can listen to an audiobook or read. But I mean, being sick and missing school for them is not a treat, I'd say. I mean, they know they have to make up the work. And so, I mean, I will try to say to them, if you know what you feel like, I'm not in your body, you decide if you are well enough to do something for school. I mean, pick which subject you feel like you can do right now, or if you need to go rest, that's fine. And they know they'll have to make up the work later. There's no just taking a day and not doing the work involved. If it's me, I usually take some ibuprofen and just kind of plow through. And maybe that, you know, I'm sure there's been days where that has been detrimental to my children because I'm not as patient or not as kind about the schoolwork. So I mean, if I was horribly sick, I definitely would take time off. On days where I just kind of don't feel like it, I let myself moan inwardly for a moment and then just get started, because usually once things are rolling, it's kind of like, oh, you know, this isn't so bad and we can make it. Sometimes though, I mean, I might do small things to make it feel just more soft and a gentle environment, like lighting a candle or having, you know, a warm herbal tea to while I'm teaching. It makes me feel like it's this more picturesque, idyllic situation versus rushing around folding laundry at the same time and starting the crock pot while, you know, I'm telling someone to remind me what the parts of speech are, you know, so I can take it slower if I'm feeling that way. So my children might say, yeah, mom definitely needed a day off that day. Wish she took it instead of forcing it. But I typically try to just keep going.
I have loved everything you've said, Mariah. I'm inspired to be better. One of the favorite things that you said that I have latched onto is that it's harder to make decisions in the moment. And so you try and make as many decisions ahead of time as you can. I think I'm going to use that. That's going to bless my life. And whether we choose to homeschool sometimes or not, there are so many principles that you've discussed that any mother can latch onto and help in her children's education, whether they're in public school or not. This has been just phenomenal. Thank you so much for joining us. Are there any last thoughts that anybody wants to share before we close?
I just want to say also, Mame, I think that I've latched onto a few that I can continue or be better at, which is structure and routine and an educational environment. Even when I send my kids to school, our evenings, there's so much we can do to be supportive of our kids doing schoolwork at home and be helpful and create an atmosphere of learning and growth and curiosity.
Yeah.
And structure. Yep. Can I say that one more time? Structure. Structure and routine matter in no matter what you're doing in home life. They're huge, huge, huge. So thanks for that, Mariah.
Yeah, your kids are very lucky, Mariah. Thank you so much for joining us. This was wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning into Sister Share. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you again next week.